206 DGS on Camo X. Guess what I did over the weekend for enjoyment, which I haven't done in a long time.
You went water skiing.
I read.
Oh, my God. What did you read?
I read a popular pulpy murder mystery. Because, like I've told you, Rach, I used to love fiction, and then it's the weirdest thing. I really blame all the streaming services for my ever-increasing lack of attention span. And we all know how it is. You put something on Netflix, and within 30 seconds, you're like, not today. And you just can't commit to something. And so I was having trouble committing to books. I would read the first couple chapters. I'd put them away. I'd never go back. And I thought, okay, let's try something different. So I went into Barnes & Noble over the weekend, and I went to, like, the trashy section and bought something popular and really liked it and bought two more of the same guy's books. So, yeah.
Nice. Good for you.
Sounds very fun.
You walked in, you said, give me your finest book. Only the best will do.
I'm in the market for a book, a page turner. It was fun, though.
You guys still have books here?
Nothing makes a time go faster than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you lose yourself in that way.
It eats the hours.
Yeah, it really does.
There's also nothing better than reading before bed, except when your book is so good that you can't go to sleep.
Right.
And then you end up...
Then you have that battle where you fall asleep, but you want to keep reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just may become a trashy novel person.
Nice.
That's fine. That's nothing wrong. I mean, it's way better to read stuff like that than to not read at all.
Yeah, agreed. So the 100 deadliest days of summer, why?
We are entering them. So apparently after Memorial Day, you enter the 100 deadliest days of summer. They call them the trauma days.
God.
But it's mostly
centered
around...
For happy summers.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think of summer as like a really happy time for kids, especially because they're out of school. But that's when all these bad things end up happening to children. Like they get hurt on the grill or with fireworks or they're swimming and they're not being supervised. So, you know, just bad things can happen. So experts are saying just head on a swivel. Watch out. We are entering the 100 deadliest days of summer.
And who are you and Wheeler suing?
Wheels, we should sue the sunscreen companies because apparently... What they put on is like 50 SPF. That's not even accurate most of the time.
What?
Really?
Sometimes it can be half of that.
So they're lying to us.
That's what they're lying on the bottle.
I mean,
what I said too. I was pretty upset when I read this article.
It's the definition of misleading advertising.
It's not like more beef on our pizza.
Yeah.
Like don't get skin cancer.
Yeah, that can seriously harmful. Doesn't the FDA regulate that stuff?
I would think so,
but it's turning out that lots of popular brands, it'll say like, oh, it's 60 SPF, you're good, and then it ends up only being 30. So be very, very careful. I mean, if you're not getting sunburned, I'm sure you're applying it correctly, but it's still troubling.
I use so much.
Right.
And so often, like every couple hours, so my 30 becomes a 60 with the extra layers on it.
I was so stupid. Like, it's one thing as a kid to not use sunscreen, but when I was a grown-ass man and we would go to, like, Mexico and Jamaica, I'd be like, no, I don't have to do it. I'm very dark naturally, and just dumb, stupid things, and got to get one good burn for the summer and let it peel off, and then...
and then I'm good.
Then I'm good. Nothing unhealthy about this. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. I feel like last summer was the summer I finally just embraced the fact I am pale. Stop trying to pretend you're not pale.
Dude, I've been telling you this since I've known you.
I know. And it's a thing. You should embrace it.
Yeah.
But I fell into the spray tan trap for about 5-6 years there. And I felt better with a spray tan. But the thing is I have like reddish hair. It doesn't look the most like natural on me. And whenever it starts to come off, you get all patchy. You're like, well, what's going on here? So last summer, I did hop in the tanning bed a couple times last summer, which was so stupid, especially when you're like me and you're as obsessed with like skincare as I am. I can't believe I did that thinking, oh, after, you know, 30 something years on this planet, finally I'll start to tan. It's not going to happen. I'm just going to burn. It's time to just face the facts.
Same.
Yeah. Except I don't know that I ever had the phase where I was like, I'm going to get tan this year. I mean, I always have had a farmer's tan.
Yeah.
Like from playing sports, from playing baseball, like from the sleeves down, I mean, like, it's two different arms.
Yeah, the freckles. It's not even like a tan. It's just the freckles.
They just like come together to form a new color.
That's what's happening to me this summer, too.
And then, now I have the coach's tan, right? So I have the face below the eyes.
Yeah.
And then the eyes and forehead are normal. Stupid and weird. But when you have freckles like I do, it doesn't look as strange, I don't think, because I already have all these weird things going on. You know? They're like...
Not tanning's everywhere. Not your biggest problem.
No, it's not.
People are getting freckles tattooed now.
I know, it's very trendy.
Why?
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, I felt like it was like, oh, you have freckles, that's cute. Like, kind of in a sarcastic way.
Oh, every kid hates it when they have them.
Yeah.
When you're a kid, you're like, I hate these things. Why?
A new study came out linking tattoos to a certain kind of cancer.
Oh.
Yeah. Glad they told me now.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Dave,
pretty much everything is linked to some kind of cancer.
Back to the pale thing really quickly. Yeah. About 2 weeks ago, because Wheeler is my pale brother here in the studio, I was like, do you ever just not wear shorts because you're scared that you look pale? And he's like, nope. I'm like, yeah.
Well,
I don't know why I'm trying to commiserate with you right now.
I'm not exactly worried about it. But because the baseball, I coach in shorts. So the baseball shorts are just above the knee. So from the knees down, nice. I got a little bit tan.
I had the reverse thing happen when you and I went and took batting practice at Busch Stadium. There were it was a bunch of clients, and then Wheeler and I shoved our way in, and there was like 20 guys, and I wore jeans and a t-shirt, because I'm like, what sort of douchebag is going to wear like baseball pants? Well, every single person but me. Oh. I was the douchebag in jeans. So I went and I bought some baseball pants.
Yeah, the most people were like, what? Like I had sweatpants on. Some people had shorts. I thought that was a little bit. I don't know. I guess it was hot, so I guess it makes sense. I didn't even think of it though. Like I figured everybody would just be.
Are you not supposed
normal.
To wear shorts? I would have.
No,
worn
no,
shorts.
No, no. I don't when I'm doing those things, but it's just out of habit when I'm doing those things. And also, it wasn't.
That's not a judgy.
You know what it was? No, you know what it was though is I felt like it wasn't going to be very warm, but then ended up being hotter than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the sun came out, it was like, ooh, it's actually starting to get a little steamy.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do the managers wear baseball pants?
I don't know. It's the dumbest thing ever.
It's tradition, right?
I mean, most of them now they don't even wear the full uniform anymore. Like you can notice they got the coach's jackets on. Those jackets
hoodies.
That I wear. Yeah, yeah. Most of them are doing that now instead of wearing the full uniform. And even the guys that are in good shape, right? It's not just the guys that are like, I don't want to show my belly. But like it's the weirdest tradition. I don't understand it.
I would love it if like an NBA coach was just like wearing the uniform on the sideline.
Because
like
coach has pads.
For the most part, like in youth baseball, you're not wearing a uniform. You got like a coach's shirt and coach and shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Some do. Some wear the full uniform like you'll see at the college level or whatever. But I don't get it. It's just like I never understood the football coaches that wore the jacket and tie. What are you doing? Mm. You're coaching a football game. You don't have to get all dressed up. Just put on a sweatshirt.
Rach, what's your biggest move?
Oh, my goodness. I was on a walk last night, and there was a young family walking close to me, and they had two little girls, probably 6 and 7 years old, and they were on scooters. And very rarely things like this will just take me straight back to childhood, but this little girl turns around. She goes, Mom, Dad, watch me. I'm about to do my biggest move ever. And it does, like, the cutest little, like, you know, like hop or something.
Cute.
But it's just, like, that's such little kid speak. Like, this is about to be my biggest move ever.
Mine was, we would go to our cousin's house that had a pond, which was just like a little S hole, and it was only about 3 feet deep, and I couldn't swim. So I would walk along the bottom and then swim with my arms and be like, look!
I did the same thing. And I really thought I was fooling people.
Oh, me too.
And it's like, you've never had a swimming lesson, so I guess you just
and I can see your
blind.
Legs on the bottom.
Exactly.
I was going to say, then you find out water is transparent, and you're like, ow!
Ooh, so that's not how you do that? Okay.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Time to talk to our pal Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. Good afternoon.
So I was thinking about this the other day. As you know, I'm completely back in with baseball, and I watch not only every Cardinal game, but I'll watch any game. And that kind of leads me to my point. I've figured out two things that I really love about the game. One is the rhythm. And that's why I can watch any baseball game between any two teams. It's better if it's a good game, but just the rhythm of the game, which you obviously completely get.
Well, I love the rhythm of the game, too. And one of the cool things about baseball beyond that, there's a simplicity to that. I mean, everybody knows there's, you know, three strikes, you're out, and there's three outs in an inning and nine inning. And there's some kind of a format to it, and it just has a flow to it. And then I think what they've done with the pitch clock is kind of helped the rhythm come back a little bit, mm-hmm. so we're not sitting around waiting. But then there's also a depth to it, too. So one of the unbelievable things about this game is there's five layers deep. If you want to go there,
yeah.
but you don't have to go there. So the really deep baseball fan enthusiast is going to go into the depth, but you can just come out to the park and just have a beer and a hot dog and enjoy baseball and have a good time.
Yeah. The other thing is, most of us from our era played baseball to some degree. We played Quarry League or high school or something, or Wheels played in college. But even if you didn't play in college, even if you just played Quarry League, you've done it. Like, yes. You can watch them do it. You can watch Nolan Arenado make a play that you never had a chance at, and you can go, I remember when I used to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the flip side of that is he'll boot a ball that you might have caught, Dave. So, I mean, because he's human, and I think that's another thing about baseball is because we've played it, we kind of impute our 12-year-old selves into it and say, well, you know, how can you miss – how can you not hit that ball? How can you not get a bunt down? Well, getting a bunt down against the kid down the street when you're 12 is just vastly different than the guy throwing 94 mile an hour cutters. And so, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it's a yeah. way we can connect as fans to the game too, because we've played it.
And to your point, laying down a perfect sacrifice bunt against the kid from across town felt as good as it probably feels to the Cardinals, you know?
There's no question about it. So people will talk about, I was not a very good hitter, not at all, but I got a hit against a kid named Richie DiVincenzo when I was 17 years old in New York in the state playoffs. And the next hit I got, was, 8 years later against Nolan Ryan in the big league. So I went from Richie DiVincenzo to Nolan Ryan. But I can tell you, I still remember that pitch
yeah.
that Richie threw me, and he was left-handed, and I smoked it right up the middle, and I'm still excited about it.
But, Rick, remember when you're playing and you're like, who's pitching? They're like, DiVincenzo. You're like, oh, crap.
I can't get that guy.
He's unhittable. He throws like 70 miles an hour.
Probably.
I think my favorite part is, and I'm saying this sincerely, I'm not being a jerk, and yeah, I might be picking a fight with chess people, but this is the next level of a mind game like chess, because you're taking all of the things you have to factor in about your opponent, you know, all of these different tendencies, all of the different possibilities that exist on a chessboard, and then you've got to react in 0.3 seconds.
Yeah.
And every time I hear the name Whitey Herzog, I'm reminded of what you're talking about there, about the chess function
yeah.
of a game and the complexity to it, because Whitey was that guy. Whitey was the ultimate chess player, and, you know, we certainly miss him and still saddened by his passing, but his influence is going to go on in this game and certainly go on in the Cardinal Nation, because everybody loved him. He was so good to the organization, but he was one of those guys that was always 2 or 3 steps ahead.
Well, Rick, Wheels has got back from about 10 days off, went down to the Carolinas to see his daughter, and one of the last things he said on the air before he left was, if the Cardinals can go 7-2 while I'm gone, we'll have a discussion.
No.
And so here we are. So
my next thought is, you have any other place you can go, Will?
Yeah, well, they are 2-1 since I returned. I'll take that percentage
okay,
as well.
Yeah, that's not well, and it has been great. I mean, it really has been fun, and you know, the simple answer to it, and it's not again, a simple way to get there, but the simple answer is they're hitting now.
Yep.
And when you hit, you have a chance, and they've not only had a chance, but they've done something with it.
Yeah, I was listening to Adam Wainwright on with Tommy Ackerman this morning on KMOX, and I listened to him do the Fox program. I thought he did very well, and he's very candid. And this morning he was talking about Nolan Arenado, and he said, look, easier said than done, but the day that Nolan stops thinking when he gets to the batter's box is the day he'll start driving the ball again. That as a pitcher, it's especially important that you don't practice on the mound. You practice
right.
and practice, and when you get out there, you compete.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's a wise thing and not surprising coming from Waino. And, you know, it makes me think of our starter yesterday, Lance Lynn, who pitched pretty well. And the message that he gave about 9 days ago to the team, the first thing he says, I want everybody to know that Wheels is going to be out of town and he thinks we're going to do well. But he made a point to tell everybody they needed to relax. And, you know, relax is a hard thing to do when 40,000 people are watching you do it. And I think maybe that relaxed message didn't fully get internalized yet by Nolan, but hopefully he'll figure that out. That's a field thing. Everybody's got to do it at their time and their pace, and you know it's an internal thing, and you can't tell somebody to relax because they won't. But you've got to have to kind of hear that message and then get yourself there.
So Wheels has talked about how hitting a major league fastball is one of the hardest things to do in sports. I would have to think that one of the most fun things to do is when you're a pitcher and you have your stuff and you're making decisions. Most of us mere mortals are just throwing it and hoping it gets near the plate. But when you know that you can paint the corners and you've had those games, that must be so satisfying.
So that's the art of pitching. And when you get to that point where you know exactly what you're doing and you have multiple ways to go about it, now it's just the art of which comes first. I vividly remember one particular at-bat pitching to Juan Samuel, who I've been kind of dealing on, and I remember thinking, I can get him out three different ways right now. Which one do I want to go with? And now, I would never tell Sammy that. He was a good friend of mine, but I knew I could get fastball in, changeup, slider, and it's such a great feeling when you have such command at that particular time. Now, I felt the other way many times, too, but that moment, it does make the game very fun.
You know, that's kind of the other part I would add, Rick, to this discussion about the fun is, it is at the same time, it can be the most empowering sport in the world and the most humbling.
Yeah.
Like when you're on it, you're like, man, I own this thing. And then when you're not, it's like, man, I don't even know what to do. I can't get out of my own way.
When I played my level and I played shortstop, if I caught the first ball, you couldn't get anything past me. If I missed the first ball, you might as well just take me out.
Yeah, the game is played with bats and balls and gloves and all that, but it's played between the ears more than anything else. And you can see that when a team's slumping. And Cardinals are kind of slumping right now defensively. I mean, they're hitting better. But the defense, and you can almost see a tightness when the ball's hit to somebody, like, uh-oh, what are we going to do? And so you got to get past that.
All right, have a great call, pal.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and Camo X 238. Kevin Wheeler back after 100 days off.
It's been 82 years.
It felt like it.
It did to me, too, man. Yeah. Last night, I was like, I got to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? Concept. How do I do this? How do I get ready? I figured it out. I remembered the way to work.
Well, why don't you do a stairway?
All right, let's do it. So let's go back to the travel on this, too, because these things won't last in my mind for very long, so I might as well get it out of the way. So I've never experienced people, like, totally losing their crap in an airport or on a plane. I've never seen the lady who thinks that the person in the back is not real. I've never seen anything like that. But every time I travel, I am stunned at how unaware people are of their surroundings, of what's happening around them.
How they look to their kids.
If your kid's pulling their own suitcase, that's great. That's cute. It's hilarious. I had a kid. I let my kid do that. But I also held my kid's hand and made sure that that kid wasn't wandering in the middle of the aisle, blocking people that might be in a hurry because they're running late. I don't understand the people that just stop in the middle of the concourse. Mm-hmm. They just stop, like a group of five people, and we're going to have our conversation right here in the middle of where everybody's walking. Or like this. I didn't see it. I saw it indirectly, but my wife texted me. So this is at the Raleigh airport, but I've seen this kind of thing a million times. You know, they have the places where you can fill your bottled water, right? Near the drinking fountains you just put in there. There was a line of maybe 10, 12 people waiting to use this thing because a bunch of flights had just landed and others were just getting ready to leave. And this mom had like four kids and she's letting each one of them do it themselves. Fill your own bottle. And everybody around is like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are people so clueless in those environments? And it's not like if you were telling me that they were 15-year-olds and they're so used to being on their phones all the time, all right, fine. I think it's a BS excuse, but I at least understand it. If you're a grown-ass person, can you not pay attention to what's happening around you?
You know what I think it is? Just sitting here listening to you talk and going back over my files of when I've traveled, I'm pretty open about what an uneven person I am, and I am. I struggle greatly, but things like that I'm pretty good because I'm used to adversity. And I think that when you are traveling, you are facing adversity. And I think your true character comes out. And for a lot of people, like being who I am and how I am for the reasons I am the most uneven and upset and useless when things are going well. I don't know what to do with my hands. When things are going badly, put me in the game, coach. And so I'm a good, pretty good traveler, you know. But you can see that when people are not used to that and something goes wrong, like they're delayed by 40 minutes and they lose their stuff.
Oh, it's just, I mean, like, and this is all from just two flights that I'm, everything that I'm saying now, these are just things that happen in the two flights going to Raleigh-Durham and then Raleigh back to St. Louis. The business dude who's got his earpiece in having a full-throated conversation on the phone sitting around 30 other people who don't want to hear your conversation. Go take a walk.
He thinks he's the first businessman you've seen.
He's like, you know, hey, call that guy in Wichita. Make sure he knows. I'm like, shut. I'm the loudest person in the world, and I don't do that in airports. Mm. Like, why is it so hard to go, you know what? There are people around me. And I am not going to bother all of them. Mm-hmm. Like, why is that difficult for a parent? I mean, again, I know traveling with little kids is hard, and I will never complain about a crying kid, ever. They're kids. They're going to cry. And I think we as adults should be able to handle that without melting down and losing our crap. But I'm talking about the adults that are just oblivious, just walking around, not paying attention, you know, just like they got their stuff. Crowded terminal. We were in Raleigh. It was super crowded, you know, on a Friday night. And there are people like with four bags strewn across four chairs. Yeah. And you're like, you know, your own personal charging. Say, make room for people to sit down. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing if you don't want one person immediately next to you. I get that. Nobody likes that. But like when you're taking up four spots, and this one guy had his laptop on one chair, his charger's right next to it. He had a bag on the chair on the other side of that. I'm like, man, there are people walking around with no place to sit.
I'm telling you, if you're dating a new person, take a trip.
Oh, man.
See how they are. See how you are.
And yet, doesn't it, like, do you think those people that are doing those things, do you think they're annoyed by other people doing those things?
I think they're annoyed by I think they're so self-absorbed that if anything were to inconvenience them, yeah, it would be like, what's your problem? Giving no grace to the other people around them. But like in general, I think they just think that that's the way to travel. Like if you are selfish enough to take up four seats when other people are standing, like I don't think there's that much hope for you. I mean, I hate to sound that like down about it, but you don't care about other people in that case.
Yeah, I think Dave's right, though. I think it reveals something about you. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that you're a horrible person, but that you are, well, maybe you're a horrible person. Because I don't find it that hard to be aware of what's mm-hmm. happening around me. And it's the same thing with driving. The people that are driving and they're just not, they're on their phone, they're not, why is it hard to be like, yeah, you know what? There are literally hundreds of other people around me that are affected by my actions. I'm going to keep that in my mind while I'm in public.
Andrew, you want to feel that one since you're here?
I was fine. I was fine.
The thing that frustrates me the most, Wheels.
That guy was just being whiny.
The thing that bugs me the most about the people who are like not paying attention while driving or not paying attention at the airport, they're relying on the normal people to do the right thing so that they can continue to function. Like if all of the responsible people started looking at their phones while flying down the interstate at 80 miles per hour, we would have some major problems. But the selfish people just rely on everyone else to pick up the slack and look out for them. And that's what's so annoying.
I don't know if it feels like it's getting any worse because I feel like I had this complaint, like even when I was a college guy traveling around, like I still felt like it was the same idea that when people get on a trip, their brains change and they're like, I'm on vacation mode and I don't care and I'm not going to worry about, like, you could still have common courtesy, man. I don't think we have the audio today, but I saw a TikTok. It was a guy basically said, if you are a person that is aware of your surroundings when you're in public, you are in the 1% of people because so many people just don't pay attention.
I remember one thing that I had never really traveled extensively. And then, back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, again, we would go like on the Apple vacations things.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they've figured this one out. But when we first started going to resorts, it was definitely a thing that people would get up at 4 in the morning and go save a seat by the pool.
They still do that.
Do they still do that? And I would get up at 7 in the morning for the same purpose and be like, they're all taken. Like, what are we doing? And No concern, like zero concern.
That's so terrible.
No shame, no humiliation.
God, you know, people do that at sports books in casinos in Vegas.
You're kidding.
Like, no. On an NFL Sunday, like, so out there, it's a 10 a.m. kickoff.
Yeah.
You will have dudes sleeping in benches and in the spots to reserve it for their buddies. At like 6 in the morning, they'll be like drunk and hungover, and they're just going to come lay there to reserve the table. So when their buddies come down after sleeping a little bit. Yeah.
I do think vacation mode is a real thing. I think something happens in some people's brain when they go on vacation, and it becomes like, this is my vacation. I don't have to care about anyone but me, and everyone else has to care more about me.
I'm really excited. Phoebe and I are going out to Colorado together, which is great because she's home now, but you just don't see her because she's 19, right? So she's living like a 40-year-old Caspian prince. She is. She's living like Jim Morrison or something in the 60s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're heading out there, and we're driving both ways, and we're staying at a place we've stayed a couple of times already. Like that's my style.
Mm-hmm.
I get nervous when there's stuff I don't know.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I feel like I need to know it, and where's this, and where's that, and
it definitely takes away a level of
When you walk
planning.
Into a place you've already been.
Yeah.
Thank you, Scott Rutledge. It's his place in Keystone that he allows me to use. You walk in, you know which room you got, you know which room she's got, and you just chill.
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
Yep. Sounds like it's set up really nice.
I'm sure she can't wait to spend 9 days with good old dad.
How long before she's like, hey, I'm thinking about asking a couple of friends.
Yeah. How long till she's like, you see that mountain over there? You should be on that one. And I'm going to go to that one over there. Then I'll see you for dinner. A quick one. Wheeler was just talking about how annoying it was to travel. The average age that people start to become more negative is age 42.
Huh.
And here are the things that they complain about. The TV volume is too loud, music they don't like, tipping culture, social media, customer service, weather, crowds, someone else's driving, politicians, and grocery store prices.
These are all the things I complain about.
I feel like I'm
you're
hurting
ahead
the curve. Yeah, I'm hurting the curve a little bit with all my complaints.
I guess I should feel like I was like, what, 4 of those are my norms. The driving, definitely.
Yes.
I've started complaining about grocery store prices. I didn't used to, and then now it's really hitting me. I don't know why, but I'm just noticing that stuff a lot more. Like, it used to be, you know, if it was $8.
It's expensive.
Yeah, if it was $8 for a 12-pack of soda, I'd be like, well, what am I going to do? Not buy soda? And now I'm like, well, I guess I'm not going to buy soda.
I wonder what effect, because the effects are unknowable and myriad, but the effects that COVID had. So, Rach, you would have been in your late 20s during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been in my mid-50s, again, late 20s,
30.
Early 30s.
Yeah, 30.
But I think whether you were in third grade or you were about to retire, I think it affected us all in some way when it comes to how it aged us faster or it stunted our maturity or something, but I think it really had a bigger effect than we think that it did.
Oh, yeah.
It was a huge traumatic event that we basically all admit all the time we don't like thinking about it.
I know.
So it's like,
right. Yeah, it was a pandemic. Millions of people died, and we really, really didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Our lives completely shut down and changed.
And now when we think about it, we're like, I didn't like the masks.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You think?
Like, when you think back, like, the best part was, I did get to watch 7 seasons of Fortune Fire.
Right.
Like, that's your positive. I got to play some video games. That was...
Thank God it didn't come back, in full force.
Yeah.
And let's hope it doesn't again. I'm not sure we would hold up nearly the way we did before.
It would, you know, I've thought all along the same thing, that if it were something more gruesome, people would be more willing to be like, because like if it was like blood coming out of your eyes, you'd be like, oh, I don't want that thing. That's gross. I'll do whatever they say. But when it's, you know, something that seems not that bad.
Having my mom in the nursing home now, it really, really makes me feel for people who lost parents. They didn't get to see. They didn't get to say goodbye. They didn't get to even help them through their final illness. That was... Like, I didn't experience that. A buddy of mine did. I didn't experience that. No. But for the people who did, you just don't... that leaves a mark. You don't get that back.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. No closure.
I mean, people, like, your final conversation is FaceTime.
Or even, like, my mom, I'm there every day. And she knows that if she needs me, she can have someone call and I'll come out for the third time that day. You didn't get to do that.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
You had people in there struggling and you just had to go like, yeah, I can't do anything.
Did you guys see the videos in that time of people that would be like, where they would wheeled out by the window and you could just wave hello through the window.
Yeah.
So sad.
Awful. Yeah.